Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, busy weekend in sports. We'll get to that, but we're joined by my producer for the next couple of weeks. Steve Bursnick is on vacation. Say hello to a guy who I used to say hello to every morning on DAE years ago. Derek Sharp joins us this week.
What exactly was that year? Because when you did the intro there, I always get a flashback to that very first show, but it's been a while.
We should hear like Start Me Up by the Rolling Stones or something. That's what I think of, but yeah. Well, you joined us when Steve went on vacation before, and those were memorable shows. We have a lot of fun on Misery Lane. We spend some time down there, but not too much time. And of course, if people don't know, of course, you're now doing great work at USF, and they can find you everywhere calling all kinds of sports over there.
Yes, I think since the last time we talked, I've added about 12 more sports, actually, in all seriousness. The next one that is coming up in a couple years is women's lacrosse. So they've decided to add sports that I really don't know much about and we'll have to bone up on. But we're into starting up, I guess this would be year six.
Wow.
We went on the air in 17, and yeah. It was just about getting the iHeart channel, on the air, keeping it on the air. It's USF Bulls Unlimited on your iHeart app. Just type USF and you'll find it. But that first year I called bare minimum women's basketball and baseball again, because we were just trying to stay airborne. And then once I realized that I could branch out and how much I love doing play-by-play, we kind of sprinkled in some soccer. And then 2 years ago, I gave a crack at volleyball, and I guess I'm not terrible at it. And then a lot of softball. So yeah, that pretty much covers every sport that USF at least is play-by-play a bowl to put on the radio. We do it, so we really love doing it. And of course, I keep an eye on what you guys have going on here, and I always read your stuff, and it's always good to reconnect, as it were.
Yeah, for sure. And the sports over there at USF is growing exponentially, and the whole athletic program. We'll get into the football, all they're doing, in terms of just the physical appearance of their facilities, and then. Of course, Coach Jeff Scott has a big addition to his coaching staff. So we'll talk about all of that in just a minute. I want to start with the Bucks. The rookies have reported. We have NFL football going on around the nation. There are a bunch of teams, I think up to a dozen or so by now, that have actually begun camp. The Bucks, of course, their rookies came in on Saturday. The full squad reports on Tuesday. First workout, I think, Derek, is like 8 a.m. on Wednesday morning. I'm going to have to set the alarm for that one because I haven't had to get up in the summertime with the kids yet. But that's going to be awfully early, and I'm glad because it's about 1,000 degrees. It's like walking on the sun out there even at that hour. So
grateful. Yeah. The weather is and everyone's going through it, obviously. But there was an event on Sunday that was out at the Carrollwood Dog Park, the nice park there, and it was 10 o'clock, which seems like a reasonable time to be outside, but it's not. And on Saturday, we had a friend's 50th birthday party at the nice, whatever it's called, W. Bird place at the Armature Works at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. There is no need to be doing anything outdoors. Happy birthday, Jeff, and all that. But God, yeah. I mean, 8 a.m., please sign me up. If I know, not for your purposes, but in general, if they decided to go earlier, not many people would complain. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, not at all. And I missed that. That was Jeff Kamis, of course. We know Jeff from the Bucks, from PDQ and all of that.
Well, I did want to say that because I wasn't sure. I saw a lot of, I saw Chris Harry there. I saw Joey Johnston there. I'm like, did he hate Stroud? I think
my invite got lost in the mail. I'm sure it got lost in the mail. I imagine he probably sent it to me or my wife. Both of us were unavailable at the time. We've been seeing a lot of Jeff at various things. Some not so happy, but. Nonetheless, he's one of our favorite people. We talk to him all the time. He's on the board of directors with my wife at Brooks DeBartolo High School. So they probably see each other more than I see Jeff, and I see Jeff quite a bit. But yeah, now Chris actually sent me a picture of Monty Kiffin. Monty Kiffin was there. So he got the invite. Yeah.
I must have missed Monty.
You must have missed them, yeah, because he mentioned you were there, and then you must have left, and then Monty Kiffin, and you know, the quintessential disheveled, you know, professor of defense, and I could just imagine. How you guys doing? But you know, it was it looked like a nice event, but yes, warm would be the part that might have bothered me at 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
And for the people that don't know, Jeff was a longtime director of public relations, basically, for the Bucks, and just, you know, some of those guys, there's always a chance you could have adversarial behind the scenes relationships. Obviously not, because all of these former media people were there and everyone loves Jeff. But the point being, way too hot to be outside in the afternoon, but you're going to be there bright and early on Wednesday. Now, as far as the rookies go, I know it's almost like a preschool this weekend, and it's even more than just the rookies. What's kind of like the situation?
Yeah, no, it's predominantly, I think the quarterbacks are allowed to come in if they want to or can. I think they might have a couple classes involved there, but it's really not for the veterans. It's sort of a reorientation. You know, they throw a lot of these guys in OTAs, and then they have the rookie mini camp, and then you know, then the veterans and all of them convene at the end of the off season in the mandatory mini camp. And then after that, they scatter. And so, you know, for these players, it's a lot of install, and, you know, they're coming off their college seasons. They've been training for the combine. They get drafted. They get the crash course, and they throw a lot at them. And so before, you know, training camp begins on Wednesday with Wednesday morning's practice, they just want to, you know, kind of go over some of the things that these kids might have questions about, because I say kids, they're grown men. But what happens is once you blow that whistle on Wednesday, it's no longer really try. I mean, they have a 90-man roster. They got cut to 53. So I can't say tryouts are over, but they're not there to teach as much as they are to prepare. And it's a different mindset, because now it's regular season. You know, for all that you can say, well, it's preseason, it's training. Now you're preparing now for one opponent on September 11th, and that's the Dallas Cowboys. And so, you know, they're leaving you behind. If you're not in your playbook by the time you get to One Buck on Saturday, and certainly by the time everybody is there on the practice field on Wednesday, it's too bad for you. It's going to cost you reps. It's going to maybe cost you your job, unless you're a high drafted player or they got a lot of money in you. Because there's 53 spots and there's 90 guys that want them. So this is a chance over the weekend for them just to sort of catch up on things. And there were a couple, players, when they started on Saturday, or at least Friday night, that were still unsigned. And that really shouldn't happen, because there's a rookie salary pool. There's only so much money allotted per player. They got it done with Logan Hall, who was their first pick. He was the first pick of the second round, but he was the Bucks' first pick. Their defensive tackle from Houston, who you have probably seen quite a bit play. And then Cade Otton, who is their tight end. He was the final guy to sign, and he did that on Sunday. He's the tight end from the University of Washington. Now, he had missed all of the offseason, because in November he had ankle surgery, so that knocked him out. It probably actually was a plus for the Bucks, because I think had Otton not gotten hurt, he probably would have been able to do some stuff at the combine, would have been drafted much higher than the fourth round. Mm-hmm. They get him in the fourth round, kind of a steal. Now he is healthy. He has been cleared to play and practice in training camp, which he didn't get to do in the offseason. So he comes in, you know, in a tight end position where, I mean, they lost a guy named Rob Gronkowski, we think, for the time being, and O.J. Howard. And so between those two guys, that's over 1,000 snaps now that somebody or some a bunch of other players have to make up. And they've signed a free agent in Kyle Rudolph, the Giants and former Minnesota Vikings tight end, who's a veteran. He's, you know, 32 years old. Gronk was 33. They still got Cam Brate, who's 31. But really these two young guys, in Cade Otton and Coke Keith, who played at the University of Minnesota for about 7 or 8 years, it seems like. he's like a blocking tight end. And then Cody McElroy, who's got all of one game, I think, in the NFL. So it's a really young group. And, you know, it's funny when I go on these shows occasionally, you know, this is the preseason. So, you know, you got all the NFL radio and different people calling, wanting to do previews. And they all get to the tight end position, or they ask, you know, where are some of the the question marks about the Bucs, because they got a lot of guys back, a lot of returning players. And really, tight end is one of those question marks, because they think Rudolph will be he's a smart guy, he's a big guy, but he's not as fast as he once was, and his production has definitely started to slide. But that's one where you could say, man, that's a step back. You go from the greatest tight end of all time, who has caught more touchdown passes from Tom Brady than almost any two players in football history, to, you know, was a bunch of two really young guys, and then Kyle Rudolph and Cam Brate. So it's going to be a position to watch.
And you look at the guys that they drafted, and the good thing about what the Bucs have done over the last few years is they built depth and they've built quality at so many positions. I don't think there are too many where they're going to have to have one of the new guys, one of the rookies, you know, perform right away. I guess offensive line, they could use the other second rounders help quicker, sooner than later. But yeah. You bring up a good point with tight end, because last year, and listen, he's got other high leverage options to throw the ball to, but it always seemed to me on a third down, third and five, third and six, that it's like security blanket. That's your guy, Gronk. Yep. And now, can any of these guys, Kate Otten, I guess, would be the one, even come close to that? And I don't know. I'm leaning towards Cam Brate, but I guess they thought highly enough of Kate to take him in the fourth round. So I don't know if you're looking at any of those rookies per se and putting a lot of pressure on them outside of maybe spending a fourth rounder on a punter. You want that to pay off, but I guess he'd be a guy to keep an eye on in that regard.
Yeah, I think he's someone to watch. I think, you make a good point. I mean, the thing about, you cannot replicate what Brady and Gronk have, and no one in NFL history can really do that. And so those are such enormous shoes to fill. You wonder how quickly, Brady can develop some kind of rapport with Rudolph. He's got it with Brate, but Brate's not getting any faster. He's a red zone target. I mean, I think I saw the other day, which was amazing to me, but it shows about his longevity, I guess, and playing with Tom Brady. I think Brate has the third most touchdown receptions in Bucs history, if you can believe that. But he's been here, some 9 or 10 years. But yeah, after that, there's not anyone at that position that Brady is used to playing with. I mentioned Hall, and I said it kind of quickly, but you saw him play, I'm sure, against USF. This guy's an enormous football. He's very young, by the way. I think he's only like 21, 22 years old. But I think he's somebody that, as time goes on, they have Akeem Hicks to start the season at defensive tackle. But Logan Hall, to me, has an enormous upside. I think they're really happy with him.
Yeah, Houston is a team that has given the Bulls fits the year that was the fateful 6-0 start, and then they go up against Houston and they have them basically defeated, and it's 4th and 24. Now Miami Hurricane or Derek King decides to complete a 4th and 24 pass, and it went on from there. But the last 2 years haven't been as close of an affair, and they had Ed Oliver, of course, high draft pick a couple of years ago. And then Hall is one of those guys that they were just so strong up front, and the Bulls really, really struggled against them, particularly 2 years ago when he started to come into his own. So, I don't think, again, they're going to need him to be great, but a guy that can pressure the quarterback, no doubt about that. And, I don't see him doing a whole ton or needing to the first year, but certainly a guy that you can rely upon in, years down the road. The Bulls saw enough of him, trust me.
Yeah, no, he's a talent, and he's a young guy, and they like what they see him. Of course, you can't really judge those guys till the pad come on, but I think he's going to be in the rotation for sure. We'll get to more football, more talk about college football and USF in particular. But first, you mentioned it was hot out there. That means my AC is running all the time, and my electric bill each month is going up. We got a way to help you save that, and call our folks at May Electric Solar. Look, it's a family-owned and operated business. They've been installing solar electric systems for 12 years. It's a field where there's many of these fly-by-night companies. You get solicited all the time. But May Electric Solar, it's committed to you for the long term. Now, they guarantee their workmanship with a 30-year labor and services warranty. Plus, every installation, you get $750 worth of surge protection for all your appliances. That right there is the May difference. If you visit their Hudson showroom, May Electric displays all of its products, and it conducts on-site testing. You can see exactly what they're going to install. Plus, this is important. They don't use subcontractors, so you know exactly who is doing the job. So start saving today. Call the Solar Energy experts at May Electric Solar at 727-819-2862 to schedule a free estimate. You can lower your electric bill all year long, preserve your quality of life, and preserve your appliances as well. That's 727-819-2862. All right, since and this has only been a couple weeks now, Derek, and this was big news, is the addition of Chad Morris to the USF coaching staff under Jeff Scott. And forget about whatever title they gave him. I don't know if it's like, what is director of the op? I don't know exactly what they
it is
called him.
It is. He can't be an offensive coordinator, though he's an offensive coordinator sort, but they've got their staff filled up, and he can't be on the field during the games.
He's an analyst or something like that. Or,
yeah, I want to make sure I get the exact. It's senior offensive analyst is what there I'm pretty sure it is. That in that regard. But yeah, on the staff is the important thing.
Right, right. I mean, and this guy, I mean, head coach at SMU, where I remember him of late. He was at Arkansas, obviously. And more importantly, he worked with Scott at Clemson. Both of those guys have called plays, have worked together. This kind of was kind of a late addition to say the least, but what an addition to somebody who could immediately be a big help for the head coach. I mean, he has been exactly where sort of where Jeff Scott is, right? Trying to turn a program around. You know, he did that. He improved the win total each year at SMU with the Mustangs. That led to his job at Arkansas. Where he didn't have as much success. In 2020, he was an offensive coordinator, I guess, for Malzahn at Auburn, and they had that, you know, that shortened season. They were 6-4 that year, so a ton of experience. And I would think this was a really well regarded hire by Jeff, especially going into this season.
Well, I certainly remember him, you know, not coming onto my radar as the coach at SMU, and they were just phenomenal offensively, and he was always a great guy to talk to, and you could just tell, just personally, a great guy. But the whole Clemson program, you know, when it wasn't much, it was a 2010 season where they went 6-7, and that seventh defeat was actually to the USF Bulls in a bowl game, and they brought in this cat by the name of Morris to be their offensive coordinator the next year. Wow. The next year, they went from below 500 to a 10-win team, and the offense that was the offense at Clemson became that starting then. It was Debo Swinney's third year, and Morris was the offensive coordinator for those 4 years and the quarterback's coach. He worked with Jeff Scott. He was the guy leading that offense. So Scott has been trying to get him on the staff basically ever since he – you know, got to be the head coach here at USF. And so whatever title they give him is fantastic. And again, senior offensive analyst, you really can't, you know, coach during the game, but you can run a lot of stuff by the guys during the week and pass notes and that kind of thing. And just an incredible addition to the staff,
Yeah. Particularly quarterback position. And we'll kind of start there. I believe it was Joey Knight wrote a couple of days ago and others that Coach Scott said, look, that this time around he would hope, and you know, hope is a plan, I suppose, but he would hope that he would have a decision on who their starting quarterback will be heading into the season opener sooner rather than later this time around. I mean, last year it you know, even was in flux after the opener. This go around, you've got obviously Timmy McClain, who did a lot of nice things, started 9 games last year. He threw for what I think it was 2,100 yards himself, 7 rushing touchdowns. Obviously, a dual threat quarterback, to say the very least. But then they have the Baylor transfer, in Jerry Bohannon, who made 12 starts last year, you know, for the Bears and threw for 2,200 yards himself, and they won the Big 12 championship in 2021. I guess there's some others, right? The sophomore, what is it?
I like Trey Marsh. I mean, he's a guy that, and this is the whole point. I mean, he and Timmy, as a true freshman doing what he did last year, was outstanding. And Marsh, he's got he's got the best arm of any of them, but, and I'm not getting on you here because believe me, I've had to double check and make sure I'm right. I'm actually going to talk to it's G-E-R-R-Y, but it's Gary tomorrow. Gary. And the timing of me being on the podcast here is pretty good because it just so happens that tomorrow is the offense photo shoot day at the school. And this is something that starting, well, I guess it would have been 2020, actually 2019. Essentially, they set me up. They have the photo shoot inside the Yingling Center. And they set me up in the Hardwood Club, which is a nice, huge room where donors hang out before basketball games. But I get to hang out and interview whoever I want. And he has not made any public comments, at least that could be heard, since he transferred to USF, Mr. Bohannon. So I'm going to talk to him tomorrow. I'm going to talk to Timmy McClain. I'm going to talk to Trey Marsh and an assortment of offensive players as well. And then Tuesday, the same for defense. So we'll be able to pass along some sound bites and some comments. But Bohannon definitely had to bide his time there at Baylor. And he's a kid that came in highly regarded and just kind of took over in the midway point of the season. And they got to the point, even though he was injured with a hamstring, where he didn't actually play in the Big 12 championship game, but he got them there. He got them there. Mm-hmm. He got them into the top 10. Now with Gary, he is... You know, frankly, you look at his passing numbers, they're not going to blow you away. That's why the kid Chapin got the Baylor starting job, or at least after their spring game, the youngster was granted that job. And what was cool is Bohannon, so highly regarded, the head coach there, essentially said, listen, let's go ahead and make this decision now. The youngster is going to be our starting quarterback because he's a little bit better of a passer. And he gave Bohannon the ability to transfer somewhere. And the fact that the Bulls were able to score this guy says a lot about the program. And I think it's very interesting to hear that coach wants to get it, you know, squared away pretty quickly, because that has not been the case the last few years. I know last year he was a big fan of Cade Fortin. It was his first big, really, transfer out of North Carolina, and, you know, a big time leader, but just, he really struggled under the bright lights in that first game at NC State. And McClain became the guy pretty quickly, about midway through the second game against the Florida Gators. And I know a lot of fans, and I'm a fan of Timmy McClain myself, might have reacted similarly when they saw the Bohannon news. Like, what does this mean for Timmy? Well, it means what it should mean, and that is competition. And when you've got young guys, and everybody in that quarterback room pretty much is young, they also like Byron Brown, who's going into his first year full, and you know, sometimes it happened towards the end of last year. They really had a poor offensive showing at Tulane. The Warren I-4 was an exciting game, but really the defense kept them in it. And so, McClain and the staff decided, I'm sure, could use a little competition, and he's getting it with Mr. Bohannon. So that is going to be a fun one to watch. But either way, just the overall level of the competitors is so much higher than it was just a couple years ago.
And McClain, I mean, there were some games I felt like, you know, he put the ball where it needed to go and his receivers might have let him down. There were other games where you saw him make plays with his feet too. You know, and this is a pretty good
sensational. Yeah. And there, the receiving core is amazing. Xavier Weaver actually just got named to the Biletnikoff watch list, and there's only 43 guys on that list. So that's not bad. Jimmy Horn is the guy that, of course, won a state championship at Seminole High School in Sanford with Timmy McClain. So you got the Timmy to Jimmy. You got the 9-5 combination there as well. And they're not alone at receiver. Joe, who is a transfer from, go figure, Clemson, added to the list. So they've got the weapons. And so that makes it more important to make sure that the right guy is leading the way as far as throwing the ball. So it's going to be, yes, it always seems like it's the number one topic, but I think rightfully so this year. Quarterback.
Yeah, it is for every team, and I think competition will make those guys better, and that's the whole idea. Plus, you have injuries, and you have to have depth at the quarterback position. So we'll see. I tell you this, and you know this since you've been over there, Derek, how that program and how the facilities in that program, where are we at with the indoor football facility? They've got, I guess, more than stakes in the ground there. There's lots of talk and funding that has begun for an on-campus football stadium. These are exciting times for and uncertain times as well in college football all around the landscape, not just USF. But as far as what USF needs, they're starting to get the infrastructure that they need.
Oh, for sure. The indoor performance facility is basically complete on the outside. It's just about, the rather extensive stuff that goes on underneath. And right. We are looking at that probably. Now, if people think it's going to be ready for the start of the football season, it's not, but it's going to be somewhere in the middle of the season is what I would predict. And Right. Listen, it is going to be phenomenal. It's going to be an outstanding resource. And even if everything's not perfectly in place, you can go indoors. I'm thinking, sometime around when the season starts, if it's not a full practice field, it's going to be close, and then it'll be full sometime during the season. People are going to get a chance. A little inside information. I don't want to give out too much, but people are going to get a chance to check that out down the road for themselves once it's all ready to go. It's not there yet. As far as the future on-campus stadium, there's actually going to be, I think the date is August the 13th, an awarding of the construction rights, basically. And from then, it'll take off. And listen, if you ever drive by campus, people are welcome to do this, by the way, just there on the what would that be, the east side of the campus, 50th Street. Just slide on in down Sycamore Drive, and you could see the indoor facility and keep on driving north. And there's just a huge expanse of fields with trees and sort of nothing. So I can see where it's going to go up. I can see where it's going to be a phenomenal thing. But there's going to be a lot of momentum towards that over the next few weeks when more of the details come out.
It's really cool, and it's hard to believe that here we are in 2022. It hasn't been that many seasons, and don't pin me to it because I don't know. It doesn't seem like more than half a dozen if it's been that long. Even the Buccaneers did not have an indoor practice facility. And in this weather, not just the heat, but obviously the unpredictable summers, sometimes too predictable thunderstorms that roll in around 4 o'clock, I can't begin to tell you what a game changer it is. I know it is for us when we're in the media, we're not playing or coaching, but to be able to take those guys and get them out of the heat, get them out of the elements, is a must. It's an absolute must in football in Florida. And I also think that, the one thing about working in this every day, everybody's like, okay, so you have a team in Florida and teams come from down out north. That's your advantage, right? Like you're used to the heat and the humidity, and they have to endure it. Yeah, but they only have to endure it for 3 hours, and they're hydrated when they arrive. Whereas if you've been working outside for 6 days leading up to that game on Saturday or Sunday, you've had some fluids taken out of you. So over the course of a long season, that catches up when you get later into the year, the November and December. So I have seen it. And I think it's helped the Bucs. I think it helps everybody, just mentally sometimes to have a place to go and be indoors and get out of the elements, even if it's just for that purpose, just to cool off and have a practice, whether it's a walkthrough or even a full practice, away from those elements. And it's just hard to believe that here we are in Florida and they're having to still endure that. But thank goodness they're going to finally, be on par with so many other programs in this country.
Well, I hadn't honestly thought about all that. I was just thinking purely from a media standpoint.
Right.
And God, I'm going to be able to go inside. But all those other points you make are very irrelevant.
Those are nice too, but believe me. It's Honey, how was work today? Oh, they were inside. Oh, thank God they were inside. Like it's that little flash you get on your phone when they're telling you, hey, practice has been moved indoors. Yes!
Yes! And awesome. And incidentally, we're getting more hints as to other stuff that's going to get unveiled this week. People have been clamoring for new uniform reveal and that kind of thing. And they've been actually putting today's date, so maybe by the time people are listening to this, it's already been put out at 7:25 is significant in some way. But yeah, a lot of things to get excited about, and pretty cool that the timing of these 2 weeks that I'm going to be helping you out here is also the time that USF training camp will get going as well.
That's perfect. We'll have lots to talk about, both with USF, the Bucs, of course, college football in general. We'll wrap.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wrap it up with this. Not a good weekend, I should say, for the Tampa Bay Rays. They come out of their All-Star break. Look great. They win the first game in Kansas City against the Royals team that's not very good. And then all of a sudden they lose two straight. The one on Sunday was 4-2. It was some self-inflicted damage. Again, they haven't really hit the ball all that well in this series. And again, this is a team in Kansas City that had the second fewest victories in the American League. And so the Rays dropped to 52-43. Now they're out of the top wild card spot that now belongs to the Toronto Blue Jays. It's weird about this Rays team, Derek. And listen, I mean, injuries are the biggest part of sports in any sport. And the Rays have more, I think, guys on the IL than they ever have, and frontline players and you know, five starters and all of that. But then they tend to have this thing where they play down to the level of competition. They just got off a stretch there before the All-Star break where they went 6-1 against the Red Sox and the Orioles, who have been red hot, the Orioles have been. And then they go to Kansas City and they lose 2 out of 3. So this is sort of the way it's been with them, is that, you know, your good teams, you know, play well against everybody and take advantage of those lower rung teams, whereas the Rays seem to play down to their level of competition. So it was a tough weekend for them, but I think they're going to have some tough weekends until or unless they start getting some players back. And you know, they did, you know, they've gotten Brandon Lau, which has certainly helped, and Josh Lowe is swinging the bat a little bit better. And there's some things, some positive signs, but yeah, just kind of a disappointing start following that All-Star break first win anyway.
Yeah, and it was really disappointing offensively because they caught the break on Friday and that the Royal starter started getting a bloody nose and he just turned the game around. And then on Saturday, you had the new guy, Quinn, you know, break up the no-hitter with the bunt and then a two-run hit. And, okay, they're going to pull this game off. They couldn't do that. And then a guy who, honestly, I still don't know how to pronounce his name, who came in with a 1-6 record, Chris Bubich, or Bubba.
Good enough.
He went 7 innings for them today, and he's updated stats. I'm looking at my ESPN app. He is now up to tied for 140th in the majors in strikeouts after quelling the Rays. And, yeah, on Sunday, that's the issue right now. Offensively, if you look at the lineup they put out there today, you can just really see the pieces that are missing. Oh, and now they're in that second wild card behind Toronto. Got to give the Jays credit. They didn't have any issues offensively. The old 28 spot against the Red Sox on Saturday. Right. So they kind of earned that wild card. You know, it's bad when Toronto had an inside the park grand slam when the Red Sox center fielder lost the ball. And then after that, they put up an 11 spot in a different inning. So I guess Toronto rightfully came out of the weekend in the lead. But, yeah, the Rays have got to start turning things back around soon.
Yeah, hung 28 on it. That's amazing. And they're capable of doing that. And that center fielder still doesn't know where that grand slam went because he's still looking for it. Never moved even after it hit the wall in the back of center field. So
I do want to say one thing about the Sunday. It was good. And listen, he pitched fine, but Jeffrey Springs having the kid that was in the hospital for 5.5 weeks, is their young kid, Stetson, and now he's good. He's clean bill of health. So that's really the more important thing. I certainly want to acknowledge the Rays starter Sunday had a lot more things to endure than the 99-degree heat in Kansas City. So that's something that we, you know, some things are more important in sports, and that certainly
been a
is.
Long time since he pitched, and he pitched pretty well and probably deserved a little bit better fate. But, yeah. That absolutely is true. We forget these guys have lives and children, and certainly something like that could affect you. But he pitched very well. They just didn't get enough run support, and so they dropped 2 out of 3 to Kansas City. Finally, on this one, I don't know if you caught any of the baseball Hall of Fame. Big Papi went into the Hall of Fame. I don't know how you feel about David Ortiz. On the one hand, you know, he's beloved, obviously, by Red Sox fans for his clutch home runs. I think he hit 17 in the playoffs or something like that, and very memorable ones at that. And yet, You know, there was a time when, back in 2003, remember when they did that survey test conducted by MLB and the players about steroids and whatnot. And the New York Times at least said that he had, that Ortiz had tested positive back then. Never was any proof of that. And I think he kind of outplayed it.
Sure.
And you know, he's one of these ambassadors of baseball, always with a smile. Everybody
that
seems,
helps.
Seems to love him. Yes. And in a town like Boston, it's hard to be loved. believe me, unless you're a superstar. And he was that, of course, remember the Boston Marathon bombing and what he said in support of that when the Red Sox got back to playing. So, but it was a good class. It was some posthumous entries as well. But you had guys like Jim Cott, of course, pitched forever. I think one of the longest tenured pitchers in the majors. Tony Oliva, who played for the Twins. Minnie Minoso, the late Minnie Minoso, played for years with the Whites. I think at one point he might have been 50 years old when he played. Gil Hodges, who was a Dodger star, obviously managed the Miracle Mets back in 69. And then you had some Black Pioneers and Buck O'Neill and Bud Fowler. So it was an interesting class, some pretty good speeches. Ortiz was exactly what you would have expected if you scripted it. Very upbeat, very thankful, very humble, and beloved. The crowd was certainly his coming down from Boston. So,
I have no problem with him. I always have a soft spot for DH. I think it's a underappreciated role, and I'm a guy who wants universal DH. So, big Poppy, absolutely.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Well, just one more reminder that May Electric Solar is here for all your solar energy needs, and this is a good time to do it with your electric bill going up and up. They guarantee their workmanship with a 30-year labor and service warranty, plus you get $750 worth of surge protection. That's the May difference. Give the folks a call now, the solar energy experts at May Electric Solar, 727-819-2862. That's 727-819-2862 to schedule your service and a free estimate. Well, it was great. Our first night with Derek Sharp, jumping right back in it like you never left, Derek. Thanks so much for making this easy for me. And
no problem.
We can do it the next couple weeks.
Yeah, and I can hold off on my not really throwing Steve Versnick under the bus, but giving people a little bit of an insight as to what I saw with Steve specifically when it comes to the Lightning play-by-play radio booth, which I happened to catch last week, and it had not been touched since the game 6 against the Avs. We'll just keep it at that and save that story for later on.
All right. Well, we will do that on the top of the show tomorrow on the podcast, so we don't forget it. I want to know what the end of the season box looks like after they get done with it.
To paraphrase Phil Esposito, oh my lord.
Oh my lord. Yeah.
No.
Exactly. Oh, I miss the Lightning. It's painful. I was having to watch them lose. I happened to be in Denver I've been to many places. Oh yes, I was in Denver when they had the parade. I didn't go to it, but lucky me, I got caught in its traffic. And you land at the Denver airport and they go, "Welcome to Denver, home of your Stanley Cup champion, Colorado Avalanche." And then I've told this story before with my two girls. They looked at each other and we started going, "Let's go, Lightning." So these people were looking at us like, "What's wrong with you people?" But it was fun. So anyway, thanks for joining us. For Derek Sharp, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.